Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts, and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I am thrilled today because I have with me Lynette and Jeff Threadgold, and they have a real passion for a cause that has touched them in their lives and is touching many people today. So I am thrilled that they're here with us today, in addition to the fact that they'll be contributing to the wonderful new book with Jill Lublin, Messages That Matter. Welcome, Jeff and Lynette.
Thank you very much.
So tell me a little bit about how you came to the passion and the purpose to discuss some issues that have come really close to you in this book.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that we were both very professional people living the American dream, both of us having great careers, and then all of a sudden everything went haywire and we didn't know what was going on, and Jeff turned into a nightmare, and because of his brain he was falling from this dream. And instinctually, I think the biggest problem was it was like a shock. It was such a shock to our family and everything about our family that we had no idea what to do, what was the next step. He was the major breadwinner. You know, I had left a lot of decisions up to him, things that I could have easily taken care of, but I didn't because he was the economist. He was the money guy. He did all that. And so, unfortunately, I did not get involved as much as I should have. So when he got sick, life 100% changed. After 4 hospital stays and after about a good 2 years, incredible, you know, experiencing the most devastating experiences of your life, having your husband go to jail, having your husband being carted away in handcuffs several times and not knowing what was going on with him, crying your eyes out, feeling, I don't know what's going to happen to us. I finally had to get control of myself and bring myself to understanding what was going on. And in doing that, I also realized that, you know what, there's a lot of people out there. Somebody always gets sick in your family, and people do it. There's something that happens major to so many families, and we all keep it a secret, especially if it's a brain tumor or if it's a brain disease, when the person actually, their situation changes 100%, the more public they are in the public eye, then everyone like just push it under the table. And I think it's important that we don't, because, you know, what do? So many families don't know what to do. And I feel like we have lived this and we want to say, you know what, your life is not over. This is what's happened and you can rise above it. So that's kind of a brief synopsis of, you know, without going into any details of what has happened over the last little bit.
Basically, Vicki, you know, after a couple of years of sometimes bizarre behavior, I was finally diagnosed with frontotemporal degeneration or frontotemporal dementia, which is the most violent, most deadly form of dementia. It kills people rapidly. The average time to death is 5 years. I've had it for 4 years that we know of. And it just, you know, I think back to some of the things that I did before I got on the right medications, and you know, it's like a dream. You know, like a dream at that time. You know, I left the speaking career. I was on top of the world. I was on top of my profession. I was an advisor to Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. I was an advisor to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I was the only economist in the world to have ever earned a certified speaking professional or CSP designation from the National Speakers Association. And then suddenly, you know, it all stopped. I stopped speaking about 3 years ago. I wrote a weekly newsletter for 37 years, which stopped in April of 2012, read by up to a million people a week. And, it's been a tough adjustment. I mean, it's, you know, the days now are filled with boredom and depression. But they got, you know, my doctors finally got the medications right. And, you know, and we move on.
Wow, that's just incredible. So, Jeff, what has been the biggest challenge and maybe some of the lessons learned on your side from actually experiencing this? And then I'll talk with Lynette a little bit about how it's impacted her and your family.
Well, you know, I went from, you know, 35 years of speaking to no speaking. You know, I get up every day and, you know, don't have a speech to look forward to, don't have an airplane to catch. You know, I used to be on CNBC TV about every 3 weeks, numerous appearances on CNN. I did a lot of local TV, and that has basically stopped.
How do you feel about the way people treat you?
How do I feel about the way people treat me? Both of the two main Utah newspapers, the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News, both did front page stories about me, you know, very long stories about living with a fatal disease and how it's changed my life. I was a consultant to a major banking company based in Salt Lake with banks in 10 states. And once I told them about the disease, you know, they dropped me because they were afraid I was going to embarrass them or something. We belonged to a local country club, and, you know, they basically almost kicked us out because they were afraid I was going to get lost on the golf course. So it's been humbling. But at the same time, you know, I'm optimistic going forward. There is no cure for the disease, but there's, you know, the last, what was called a PET scan. It's like an MRI or a CAT scan. But the last one showed that the disease had pretty much stabilized and stopped progressing. And so that's good news. You know, but you just take it a day at a time. I mean, I will die from this disease. Just hopefully later rather than sooner. But it's had a big impact on Lynette and I. It's had an impact on our kids. It's in the same family as Parkinson's and
ALS. Sometimes it's misdiagnosed.
ALS. Alzheimer's. They're all in the same family. This just happens to be the form of dementia that is the most violent and the most dangerous. And lucky me, I got it.
Yeah. Wow. So, Lynette, tell me a little bit about how this impacted you and your family.
Well, it was a shocker. I mean, my daughter and my brother worked for Jeff in his company, you know, full time. And actually, my brother had gotten another job at the time. It was just Taylor. And things were happening very strangely, and he wasn't responding to me in a way that it used to be. And at the time, I just chalked it up to, oh, I guess we're not meant to be together anymore, because he doesn't know who I am. I mean, he knows who I am personally, but we just couldn't get along. I couldn't make sense of some of his analogies, or, you know, he'd leave the house because he had some strange ideas of why he needed to leave the house. And I just thought, instead of thinking, oh, there's something wrong mentally or physically, I just assumed it was me. I thought, okay, he doesn't love me anymore. And it wasn't until we went to a therapist, which he insisted we go to because I had had enough. I didn't want anything more to do with him. But he insisted that the therapist started to realize there's something not quite right. And so we started looking at it, but then everything fell apart. I mean, it was very easy to see something wasn't right. He'd be outside in the yard talking to himself, and then he'd go up and down the street trying to get into neighbor's house for help. And, I mean, his brain was on overload, and literally he didn't know what was happening to him, and he was trying to get all these answers. And so immediately I knew something was wrong. I think his sons had the hardest time. He has two boys, and they didn't know how to even respond to it. They looked up to their father. He was their idol. He was the man that could do no wrong. All the kids wanted to emulate him. You know, he made a substantial living, and all of a sudden he was this crazy man, and they didn't know what, you know, who he was. And I think the boys separated themselves from him because they were afraid. The girls in the family, they tried to help me and love me. We had a daughter that was living at home because everyone else had children to deal with. It came down to Taylor, her youngest daughter, and I dealing with this firsthand and dealing with the fact that he was no longer the man that we thought he was, but he was still our dad. He was still my husband. But because of this disease, it had taken a part of him, and we didn't know that we'd ever see that part again. And we had to live with that, and we had to come to grips with it. I got extremely depressed. Every time he went into the hospital, I ended up bailing him out. I ended up taking him out because he begged me to take him out, even though that was probably the worst thing to do. He needed to stay in there longer. I had to get strong enough myself to allow him to be in the hospital long enough for them to really figure out what was going on with him. That was a struggle because Jeff didn't know what was happening, and all he could see for me was from me was that I was abusing him and I was putting him away. And it was hard. It was hard to separate myself and realize it was for his best good. And looking back, it was kind of a nightmare, and there was not much help. Yes, there was a support group, but there were support groups of people just kind of complaining to each other about it. And I'm not somebody like that. I like to take action, and I'm like, okay, what are we going to do? Let's figure this out. At one point, I thought I was going to have to put him in a home because he didn't want to live with me anymore. He was so out of his mind, and he thought I was trying to kill him. You know, he didn't want me. He was always running away from me, and I thought, well, I'm not the best thing for him. So I tried to even find a home for him, and no one would take him because he was so volatile. And unfortunately, unless you put him somewhere where he's either drugged out, so they can't be, or they're in a place where they, you know, he's not at a harm for him, to himself or others. But Jeff wasn't in that place, and I refused to put him in some place where he could just be drugged out. I wouldn't do that to him. So after the last hospital stay, I just realized I couldn't put him anywhere, and I was going to make the house a hospital. I was going to hire people to be my bodyguard. I was going to do all this. We were going to turn the place into what he needed instead of looking outside of myself for what he needed. And I think
it's important to know that once the doctors got the medications right, that I'm pretty much back to myself.
His behavior is very, very good.
My behavior is, you know, is back to almost normal. I mean, I know I have a disease. I can feel it. My confidence has been not shattered, but my confidence has been hit. Certain little tasks are more difficult than they used to be. There could be a genetic component. My father, who died 3 years ago, for 16, 17 years, had either Alzheimer's or dementia or FTD. My brother, a year younger, has been diagnosed with pre-Alzheimer's. So there is a genetic component. My kids are a little fearful they're going to get it at some point. But the medications I'm on right now have really done a great job of stabilizing, stabilizing. I mean, we're going to Australia next month for 17 days on vacation. We're going on a European cruise in the fall, and just trying to, while I'm good.
His body is slowing down. He doesn't like to admit that. His body is slowing down. I mean, he's only 64. He was 61 when diagnosed, but he's only 64, and he never thought he would ever retire. You know, speaking was his passion, and he thought he'd speak the day he died. And the fact that he's not able to do that, and I want him to, spend time traveling. But I guess the biggest thing about all of what's happened and what we've learned about this is what's happened to society and what we have seen happen. The more we learn about any kind of disease, but we learn, and you feel like everybody has a family member, whether it's a mother, a father, a grandfather, a spouse, a major part of their family is being taken over by some kind of a disease. And I don't think society is prepared to deal with it. Everything is so individual. And the hardest thing that I had to learn, I was always asking, people, what do I do? What do I do? I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't have access to his pension. We have no money coming in. We don't have, and I, as a musician, I brought money in, but all of that stopped when I was a caregiver for him. And I wouldn't turn that over to anyone else. I loved him, and I'm a fighter. I just was surprised at how little people really know about what's going on in society. And no one knows what to do. There's just such a big, shush, shush. I mean, even, with this big bank, the bank was a major client of Jeff. For 17 years, Jeff was a mainstay in the media. I mean, everyone called him. Everyone wanted to know what was going on. And now it's just, oh, poor Jeff. Poor Jeff. Oh, and, it's like, forget, okay. Eventually, it's like, will he be forgotten? Will people really understand who Jeff Redgold was? And, I just don't think it should be that way. I mean, he is not dead. His brain is actually extremely bright. He doesn't have Alzheimer's. He remembers details. He remembers things that he has. I mean, that he could actually have a very good business in the sense of having people come to him and for advice and things like that. But the problem with his brain and what's happening is that the executive decision part, he can't be the speaker he was because that's the part of the brain. The brilliance of how he spoke, the brilliance of who he was, that's gone. But the information is still there. And if people understood that he's not a cripple, yes, his brain doesn't work the same way, but he still has an amazing amount of knowledge. We tend to lump everyone in the same category. We don't, we shush everyone away. And people that are afraid of that, they usually, if they get sick, hide people away, so no one really knows what's wrong with people. And I just think we need to share it. We need to be a society that says, hey, yeah, my husband's got this. But you know what? He's very capable of doing other things. He can do this. And it's just not the way it is anymore. And I mean, it's not the way it's ever been. It's a shush-shush kind of thing. You're sick. But more and more, we find out more and more of what's going on. The brain and brain diseases are happening everywhere. It's amazing how much is happening around. Somebody all the time is being diagnosed with something with the brain.
You know, I can't thank you guys enough for being here today and sharing your story. This is so moving. And I had a near-death experience with blood clots to the lungs. And I wanted, in parting, if you could just share what one thing has come out of this that maybe has been an additive to your life. For me, it is how I value time, because I was 2 hours, possibly shorter than that, from death. And I was able to overcome it. So, I mean, what is that for you, Lynette? How has that changed?
Well, it's been a big change, because we used to be busy, 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 doing this, doing that, you know, running our careers, trying to make everything work. And all of a sudden, I realize I feel like I'm actually living for the first time. I'm not afraid of this disease at all anymore, because I see Jeff in a totally different light. Some things about his personality that I ever never really noticed before, or maybe that never came out before, are now present. And we spend time together. I mean, we're a retired couple now. I didn't want to retire at my age, but I enjoy every moment I have with him. I don't think about, oh, I'm not doing this, or I'm not living my career, or I'm not. I realize, you know what, I did that, and I can maybe do it again. It's not that. I'm just enjoying every moment I have with him, because it's precious.
It's a hard way to learn that lesson, but it's a beautiful lesson. I want to thank you both so much for being here. Lynette, I don't know if the people can learn more about you, or Jeff, do either of you have websites you'd like to direct them to?
Yes, we both do. My website is lynette.com, L-Y-N-N-E-T-T-E, and Jeff's website is threadgold.com. You know, we'll eventually have probably a website together about this disease, but those were who, you know, the people that we were, that we, you know, we are. It shows his career, everything that he did, and it shows who I was, a violinist, and I even, you know, bodybuilder, professional wrestler. I did a lot. But everyone now is adjusting, and they like Daddy, they like Grandpa, and I don't know, sometimes I think it's a blessing. We were so busy in our lives that we forgot who we really were, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's
and
a big shock.
And sometimes it takes that to figure out what is so really important. Thank you both so much for being here. This has just been amazing. And thank you so much for sharing this with others who may really need you for this message.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Vicki.
And for anyone out there who would like to learn more about Expert Insight Publishing, our best-selling books, award-winning magazines, and global broadcast and communities, you can find us at getei.com. That's G-E-T-E-I.com. And have a wonderful week.